So today is the 13th of November, 2013. We're sitting in the trustees' room of the Concord Free Public Library with all these great authors, Concord authors. And I'm here with Carrie Klein. My name is Michael Klein. And would you say my name is, and please tell us your name?
My name is Peter Lovis.
Oh, that was perfect. And your date of birth, please?
I was born on the 6th of April, 1961.
Okay. Maybe you'd start off, if you would, tell us about a little bit about your people and where you were raised.
I was raised in northern New Jersey, outside of New York City, in a small town called North Caldwell. And I started working in the cheese business in 1976 in downtown Caldwell, New Jersey.
As a quite a youngster.
Yep, I was 15. It was great. I started October 16th, 1976. Mr. Knowles, who I'm still in touch with, gave me the job, and I loved it incredibly. 3 weeks into the job, I gave me my first raise. And then that February, for February vacation, so it was February 77, I wasn't even 16 years old yet, he gave me the keys to the store, and he and his wife went away to St. Bart's for the week. And his son came up every night to collect the money, and his son came up on Saturday to help me take care of the customers, because it was busier on Saturdays. And it was just an amazing experience. And the fact that he would trust somebody so young, and you know, it certainly instilled a love of service and love of product and the love of retail was just really special for me.
Tell us a little bit more about that business. So what was it called?
It was called The Cheese Shop. It was one of the franchises. The Cheese Shops International started in 1860 in New York City. And they moved up to Greenwich, Connecticut sometime in, maybe the 20s or 30s. I'm not really sure. And in the 60s and 70s, they started selling franchises. So in the case of Mr. Knowles, he worked for, I think, Bic Pen, and he was a pen salesman, and his territory was New York, Connecticut, New Jersey. And in the case of Bill Barber, my predecessor here in Concord, he was a French teacher at St. Mark's, a private school. And, you know, middle of their career, now what do you want to do? Well, I don't know, let's buy a franchise and own our own business. So they were all independently owned and operated, and what the franchise would do would be to take a percentage of sales as a fee, and you would go to Greenwich, Connecticut to be trained on how to operate a cheese store, and then you would go to your own location, find a building, and start selling cheese, and you get a monthly newsletter, and you get little special prices off as one of the franchises, and you get the bags, which was really great, because instead of, one store is going to do, 100,000 bags at that price, with 90 stores across the country, you could get the million bag run and price. So we all had our own little bags and little things for gift baskets and, like the H box and the E box. I mean, the only people from the cheese shop know what those are. And there's still a handful of us around.
That the H box and the E box?
That was just the size and shape of the box. And we'd make lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of boxes back then. The franchise itself collapsed in the mid to late 80s. So all the franchisees were no longer affiliated with, what I call the mothership. But there's still a handful of them around. There's Concord, Wellesley, Darien, Connecticut, Indianapolis, Beverly Hills, and Carmel. And the guy that worked for the owner of Wasik's, Steve Wasik, W-A-S-I-K, it's Wasik's Cheese Shop over in Wellesley, he worked for the franchise, Cheese Shops International. Well, his girlfriend, Carol, had a brother, Ken. And so Steve gave Ken a job working at Cheese Shops International, and Ken liked it so much, he started Cheese Shop Darien. And then Steve left the mothership, the franchise, in Greenwich, and bought the one in Wellesley in 79, I think.
Darien, did you say?
Connecticut. Darien, Connecticut. And another guy that used to work for the franchise opened his own store in Centerbrook. So there's a small group of us still around that still do it, to still sell cheese the cheese shop way, which is great.
The cheese shop way.
Lots of sampling, everything cut to order, not very knowledgeable staff that tends to stay a long time because they have a lot of pride in the knowledge that they've been able to accumulate. But really the ability to taste cheese before you buy it is the key thing. And the way it's set up. You know, I can walk into a cheese shop and I'll know that if this was affiliated with the Cheese Shops International back in the day, it just has the same kind of look and feel because that's how the franchise put it out there. That's what you were buying. You were buying an operating method when you went to buy a franchise.
Let's go back a little further now. I'm interested in the enthusiasm with which you took this on as a 15-year-old. Was cheese a big thing? And did your mother serve a lot of cheese or make cheese? Or
no, my parents, they'd been to Europe a couple of times when I was a kid. And so there was cheese sort of in the perimeter of my life, but it certainly wasn't a central piece. I went downtown because I wanted to get a job, and I went to the greengrocer and the hardware store and the deli and the drugstore and the photo store, and the guy at the cheese shop gave me the job. And I remember Mr. Knowles was and is, though he's not as tall now as he was then, because he's 87 now. I would stand next to him as he was interacting with a customer. And if I had a question or something, I would just, behind the counter, just kind of tap his foot a little bit so that he would kind of make a mental note of what was happening then and we could go back and talk about it. So I think it's the love of the service. Just selling cheese is just, it's a blast. I mean, it's so much fun. You get to, you know, people tell you what they're doing. They tell you about their party. They tell you about their friends. You give them a taste of something that's not quite right. You give them a taste of something else, and it's perfect, and they smile, and how much would you like? And we hear all the time, a little bigger. Oh, that's perfect. That's perfect. I mean, you're giving people perfection in their life that they want. You're giving them just the exact perfect thing that they want. And when people are waiting in line here in Concord, on Saturdays or when we're busy during the holiday season, every year I hear at least a couple, three times, wow, this is a great place to wait in line. Because as I'm helping the person that I'm helping, I'm also giving samples to the people that are waiting to be served. So I think it's a culture of service and the thrill of, it's the thrill of the sale. I mean, I like to sell and I just love to make people happy, and it's the only profession I know where you can pleasure people twice because they're having a great experience shopping with you right now, and then they go home, and when they serve it to their friends, their family, their guests, they're having a great time again, all because of what we did. It's really a great thing. It's really a great thing. I've worked in the wholesale business, worked in the importing business, selling to distributors. You know, I've worked through the entire supply chain, but I love people, and I love retail. It's just great stuff.
A culture of service. That's fascinating.
I think that's what it is. I mean, you have to, you have to want to please people. I mean, they're your customers. They're the purpose of your work, not an interruption of it. They're doing us a favor by coming to see us. We're not doing them a favor by serving them. You know, and the appreciation of that and the love of it and the excitement of it it's a gas. It's just an absolute gas. And even when I was in the importing business, I still worked at a little retail wine shop because, you know, I didn't have my, in the importing business, you don't have your hands on the product all the time. You know, you're talking about pallets of things or, you know, cases, and you're talking about number, you know, case numbers, but you don't, it's not a thing. You know, it's just a number. But when you're in retail, you're touching it, you're tasting it, you're eating it, you're smelling it, you're absorbing it at every step of the way. And it's cool. Isn't that crazy? I mean, I'll never work another day in my life because I love what I do. When I'm selling cheese, I mean, it was about a month ago. Yeah, it was about a month ago now. I was doing Tuesday and Wednesday are my days in Concord to do the administrative stuff. You know, I write all the checks, do all that kind of stuff. And I was doing some really painfully tedious stuff. I don't remember what it was. You know, it was this license, this insurance, this, you know, letter that I have to comply with for the Affordable Care Act. And, yeah, so it was like October 1st. And at the end of the, like, around 4 o'clock, I was tired. You know, I'd been sitting in the chair all day looking at the computer and making, you know, decisions and writing stuff and having to find stuff and just all that administrative stuff. And I looked at one of my folks that works for me, and I'm like, you know, I didn't buy this door to do this. I don't like doing this. This is really a drag. And she looked at me and says, what's the matter? I said, this is like, I don't like this part of the business. I don't want to do this. And I guess I was tearing up a little. I had a tear in my eye. She says, you're crying. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm just like, I just want to sell cheese. I just, what I want to do. I just want to sell some cheese. I said, you can sell cheese all day tomorrow. I'll take care of everything else. And I mean, it was a great thing. I mean, and I had a great day the next day. I mean, I had lots of customers, and I was selling what I wanted to sell, and I was tasting lots of stuff, and I was just like, I was giddy. It was so much fun. Because I'm not going to make any decisions today about how the business operates, you know, the administrative part of the business. So that's what I get to do. I took the next day off, and I just went to work. When I started at this store, it was probably October 98. And a good friend of mine was the general manager here, a gal that I went to college with, and she and I were in the food business together, and we stayed in touch, and she was the GM here. And I came here with my wife to buy some cheese, and we had a good time and bought a bunch of stuff. And we're on our way out, and Ellen says, my friend, you know, you should put an apron on and come back to retail. I said, oh, I've been out of retail for so long, I don't know that I could do that. And she goes, yeah, I think you probably could. You'd really like to. No, I don't think so. Yeah, just join us for a couple of days. Well, and my wife and I were driving over to West Concord to the over to the Five and Dime. It was kind of you go to the cheese shop and you go over to the Five and Dime. This is how we did Concord at the time. And my wife says, you want to do that, don't you? I said, what? She says, you're thinking about going to work there. Oh, no. I mean, I couldn't do that. At the time, I was the executive director of a nonprofit over in Lowell, helping people start small businesses. And, you know, I had a great job. My administrative assistant did all my work. I sat in the corner office and signed things. And I was meeting boy. You know, I'd go to 4 or 5 meetings a day. And that was my day. It was pretty easy gig. And so anyway, I'll try it again. So the Thursday before Thanksgiving in 1998, I took the day off from my job in Lowell, and I came down here to see if I could, you know, get this retail thing going again.
Thursday before Thanksgiving.
It was a Thursday before Thanksgiving. So I wanted a busy day, but I didn't want a crazy day in case I was, like, all thumbs. You know, I mean, I didn't want to, like, bungle stuff. If I'd lost it, you know, I hadn't been in retail for 8 years. But, you know, show me where the aprons are, put a cheese plane in my hand, and I just had the greatest time. It was just so much fun. So 98, 99, and 2000, I took days off from work and the Saturdays just during the holidays, and I'd work like 6 or 7 days just to come down and to come down to Concord and sell cheese. And it was December 24th. No, actually, in October 2000, I got a call. I'm at my office in Lowell. And it was the previous owner asking me if I was going to come down again this year. I said, well, I don't know. My wife's pregnant. She's due early December. We have a deal that I was going to take 9 weeks paternity leave, and I would do all the stuff during the day, and, you know, the laundry and the cooking and the cleaning and all that, but I would sleep at night. She could sleep during the day with the baby, and I would sleep at night, because if the baby woke up at night, it probably wanted something that she was much more easy to solve than I was. So I said, I don't know. He says, well, Ellen just left. I could really use your help. Like, okay. So anyway, I worked like 4 days, talked to my wife, and, you know, I worked like 4 days, Christmas time 2000. And on Christmas Eve, I was saying goodbye. I'll see you next year. And Mrs. Barber said, well, we may not see you next year. The store's for sale. Now, I got a month-old baby at home. I'm 2 years into a master's degree program, and my life was great. You know, I mean, I had a great job, great benefits, great hours, and I wanted to buy the store so badly. And we signed all, you know, the non-disclosure, all that paperwork, and I made an offer in April. Well, probably in March. So early April, they called me up and we wanted to have lunch with his family, the Barbers, and then my family, and they turned down my offer. And, okay, I mean, they had a better offer on the table. So that's understandable. I'm not going to, you know, I had a great job. I wasn't looking for a job. And my wife and I went to Maine that weekend and was a little disappointed, but I understood. And then in June or July, he called me back and he said, is your offer still good? I said, yeah, but that's all I got. I mean, that's the offer I've got on the table. I'm not, you know, playing hardball here or anything. That's why. He says, well, I just don't think these people are going to keep it the same. I think they're going to change it. And I can't do that to the people of Concord.
So who called you?
Bill Barber, the previous owner.
Barber,
B-A-R-B-E-R, Barber. So he turned down my offer in April and then called me back in June or July because he couldn't do that to the people of Concord that had been so good to him for so long, 20-plus years. And so we signed a purchase and sale in August. And that's, you know, he worked for me for 3-4 years doing the wine, which was his hobby. He loved the wine. That was his favorite part of it. And so he continued to work there. And so, see, we never made a really big public splash that it was new ownership or anything. I worked there as manager to own, and then we just signed the final papers, and that was great. And I really appreciate what he did, and that's meant a lot to me in terms of how I feel about supporting the community and making sure that the community is valued and treated respectfully as far as having a world-class cheese shop amongst right downtown, little town Concord. I mean, I do conferences and things where, you know, people, cheese shops are, you know, asking, you know, what's your square footage and what are your sales and, you know, the panels and things like that at trade conferences. And, you know, so small town. I mean, Concord doesn't have a $100,000 population. You know, we're only open 38 and a half hours a week. We're closed on Sundays. We're closed on Mondays. Like, really? That's all? Like, that's it. That's it. Just a small town. World-class cheese shop in a world-class town.
So at the time of this tremendous turnaround, you were living in Lowell then?
I was living in Townsend. I was working in Lowell. I still live in Townsend. My wife and I bought a house in Townsend in 95. Yeah.
And you moved there from?
From Littleton, and prior to that was Hingham, and prior to that was Washington, D.C.
So you really knew the area pretty well. I mean, you knew Eastern Massachusetts pretty well. And you knew of this world-class cheese shop. Because you used to come to Concord just to do cheese and...
To buy cheese. I first went into this store in the mid-'80s when I was in the wholesale business, and I sold Bill cheese. He was my customer. So that's how I got to know this store when I sold to Wasix, and there was a few other cheese shops around. So I was the outside salesperson for a cheese distributor. So I would go to all the stores and try to sell them cheese. But I knew that Bill would place the order, but there was an amazing French woman, Madame Lepreux. Everybody just knew her as Madame. And she was the flavor of the cheese shop. Yeah, Bill and Louise owned it, but Madame was the flavor. So I always, whenever I left having sold Bill some cheese, I'd always make sure that I went out and I spent time with Madame, so because she was the one that was going to put it in the bags and I'd be able to get a reorder. She was great. So when she passed away in 1999, although she'd never worked, 2009, excuse me, she never worked for me, but she had this stool that she would always sit on, which, and sitting is an offense in retail. You don't sit when you're in retail, you stand. But she had a stool. So I had her stool engraved in her memory, because she was a great lady. She was an institution in Concord. A lot of people in Concord actually thought she owned the store. Again, she acted like it. She was great. She was just a scream.
What was her name again?
Madeline Lepreux. And I'd have to look at the spelling. I'd have to look on the stool, exactly. She never worked for me. I mean, I knew her. She retired from the store before I worked there, even when I worked there in 98 and 99, just temporarily, as a seasonal couple days a year worker. She wasn't there then, but I knew her from when I was in the wholesale business. It was a very sad day that when she left us. And it was a very sad day when Bill Barber left us a couple Augusts ago.
So tell me, it's still called the Cheese Shop.
The Cheese Shop, yep.
And the location is?
29 Walden Street. There's two streets in downtown Concord, Main Street and the other street. We're on the other street.
How would you rank it of all the cheese shops that you have served or been acquainted with? Was this a really special one right from the get-go?
Yeah, it was. It's been a world-class cheese shop ever since I've known it, since the early 80s. With full service, with expert help. Yeah, it's small because it's not a urban environment. I mean, you're not drawing from hundreds of thousands of people that can walk there, but the selection in the service was top notch. Always has been, and always will be as long as I'm involved.
Tell me about your employees now. Do you manage to hang on to people for a while, or do you? What sort of people would want to work in a cheese shop?
My employees. People tend to come in when they're in a certain phase of their life, when they're in a certain life stage and are looking for something else to do or just think this would be fun. And there's lots of different examples. That's kind of how they come into the door. If they're the successful ones, that's how they get in the door. But then they tend to stay for a long time. I've got 16 employees, and more than half of them have been with me for 5 years or more. This is a retail business. It's not a, you know, not a huge corporation, you know, easy job. This is usually a very transient sort of industry. And they stay for a long time. I think that has a lot to do with the way I manage them. People are really, really special to me, and I like to treat them well. I like to treat them the way I like to be treated. I'm not a yeller and screamer. I'm very calm, no drama. Let's get it done. Give lots of positive feedback when they're doing great things. Try to give them opportunities to grow and develop and learn new things and learn new skills. And I don't know what it is that I do. If I did, I'd do more of it. But it must be doing something right because they stick around. And the college kids, they all want summer jobs, right? Some college kids want summer jobs. Well, I don't have a summer job, but I try to hire one or two either high school graduated seniors or first-year college freshmen over that summer, and they agree to come back every year for Christmas. And they keep coming back. I've got two that have been with me for 9 Christmases and several that have been, you know, 5, 6, 7 Christmases. It's crazy. And then when they come back, even if they've graduated from college and they've gone off to their own career, still when they come in, these are my kids. You know, these are like my kids. And there's a great deal of love. I mean, I tell my employees all the time, you will never work for anybody that loves you as much as I do, truly loves you as much as I do. And they tell me that later. I mean, I get calls or emails from, oh, this guy's a real animal, you know, you're right. You'll never work for anybody that loves you the way I do. And I love them. I really love my kids. And, you know, all my employees, my regular year-rounders are great, too. And they stick around, too. So I had to be doing something right. If I knew more about what it was, I'd do more of it. But I just try to do the best I can and treat people as I want to be treated. In 2008, you know, the economy collapsed in the fourth quarter, which is our most critical time. But in 2009, I started a 401k for my employees. In winter of 2010, 401k retirement plan. In 2010, I put in a 1% match. 2011, I put in. Now I have a 2% match.
What's this
401k.
The match.
If they put 1% of their salary in, I match that 1%. If they put 2% in, I match 2%. If they put 3% in and I have a 2% match, I match the 2%. But right now I'm up to a 4% match for my. And so whereas a small business, particularly with a lot of young people, they're able to invest in some of their retirement. I also hire a financial advisor to come in 4 times a year to try to develop some economic literacy and some, you know, awareness on how to, you know, think about your finances, think about your budget long term. So you think of a 22-year-old person that's putting in a couple $1,000s and getting a couple $1,000s back from me, what that's going to be when they're 65, 70 years old and they're ready to retire. They'll have some serious money if the markets continue to do okay. But, you know, I try to invest in them as best I can and share what I know and give them what I think they need to know, if not from me, from somebody else.
Very unusual.
Yeah, pretty crazy. My accountant hates me sometimes. But, you know, you don't run a food business by the numbers. You know, and I know the numbers. I mean, I know every number in my store. I know them all. But you run a business, a food business, I believe, really believe, particularly, you got to run it by your heart. You can't just run it by the numbers. It's got to be run from the heart. And that's what I do. I mean, I've got a lot of heart. I got a lot of heart, a lot of passion, and a lot of love to give.
Well, now talk about your customers. Who are they? Do you get just local people, or are there tourists? Are there who comes in, and how do you size them up, and how do you deal with them?
Well, you deal with every customer individually. There is no one type of customer. Every customer is an individual, right? You can't treat anybody any different from who they are. And treat them with respect, you know, listen to what they're saying. Try to figure out what they're saying, even if they don't know what they're saying. You know, you'll get customers that want something that's soft and French, and it turns out what they really wanted was something firm and Dutch. But you have to listen. I mean, listening is a real life skill. Listening to what people are asking for. And we have, I break my customers into three different, you know, groups. The first group I call the convenience buyer. And those are people that come in three or four times a week. They're picking up either a little bit of lunch, or it's the tourists that are, you know, it's not the same tourist from Madison, Wisconsin. It's, you know, the same busload, you know, and it's a fairly frequent visit with a, you know, not a really big ticket. And that comes from a really small geography. So I'm pulling just from downtown employees and tourists, basically. Then I have the lifestyle buyers, who are customers that believe that the cheese shop in Concord enhances their lives. That too is a frequent visit, probably once a week, but it's a big ticket. It's a $100 ticket versus a $10 or $15 ticket on the convenience buyer. And those are both from the small, you know, immediate, you know, the lifestyle buyers might come from the contiguous towns, you know, Carlisle, Lincoln. And having the cheese shop available to them is important. They shop the whole store, they might do some catering, they buy sliced meats, they buy olive oil, they buy cheese, they buy crackers, they buy wine. You know, that's why they live here, because they love to have us nearby. They don't have to go to Boston to get a world-class, you know, specialty food store. And then I have what I call a special occasion buyer. And these people may come only three or four times a year. They too shop the whole store, but they come from a huge geography, up to an hour away. We draw people on a regular basis from as far away as Worcester, Duxbury, you know, an hour's drive. A lot of people drive up to an hour to come to Concord to the cheese shop, which is pretty good. And that's not just good for me. I mean, they don't just come to the cheese shop. I mean, they're also going to the toy store and the bookstore and the clothing stores and the jewelry stores. They're looking around. But it's like, what do you want to do today? Oh, let's go to the cheese shop and see what's going on in Concord, which is great. Those are great customers. It's kind of the three broad groups. But again, it's really, I mean, there's lots of merging in those groups. You know, there's a convenience buyer that becomes a lifestyle buyer, you know, is mostly a convenience buyer, but occasionally is a, you know, special occasion buyer. Maybe they buy sandwiches every day, but they use, you know, they're having a party, so they want to, you know, behave as a who normally would be the special occasion buyer. So there's lots of, so everybody really is treated individually, and I think that's how people need to be treated. You can't just group people into one and treat them all the same. Yeah, everybody's an individual, everybody has their own wants, everybody has their own communication style, everybody has their own interpretation of what's sharp, you know, or salty, you know, and that comes down to listening and paying attention to the individual that's in front of you. It's a gas. I'm telling you, selling cheese is a gas. It's a hoot. I love it.
You got this store essentially because the previous owner was afraid that your rivals there would change it
Yeah.
Make it into something else. What kind of changes have you made to the store? And it's 14 years now, isn't it, that you're going on with it?
Yep. I've been the owner. I started full-time in October 11, I guess. Yeah, October 11, I think, yeah. And then we closed the final deal in November 2003. So my 10th anniversary is coming up in a couple weeks. But again, we never made a big splash as to there was going to be new ownership or anything. We both agreed not to make a big deal of that because we didn't want to have people that, oh no, what's going on? What's happening in the cheese shop? What's going on? I mean, because this is it's an institution in town. It's been a well-run business for 46 years. You know, I'm very proud to be the third owner and have 10 years of the third owner under my belt. Changes that I have made, very little that the customer would be able to see or put their finger on. I think I've elevated the level of service and expertise. I think people are staying, my employees are staying longer, which makes them more expert. I've done some capacity building things, like putting in a new walk-in that we didn't have before, so it makes things a lot easier. A walk-in cooler. It's a big refrigerated box. But not anything that the customer would really see physically. It's still an old store with worn-out rugs and wooden beams and baskets handles that sometimes don't come off perfectly, but they're good enough to hold a bag full of groceries. Not a lot. Not a lot. And it doesn't need to be changed. It works well. And counters are the same, and the smiles are the same, and the samples are the same. And you know, maybe I've lifted it a little bit, but that's not to say that it wouldn't have been elevated, because as times change, things change. I mean, back in the 70s, we were selling Colby Longhorn and gourmandise with Kirsch, not cheeses that you would find at a fine cheese store anymore, but that's what was around then. Now, you know, you wouldn't find port wine logs rolled in walnuts anymore, but that was a big thing in the 70s and the early 80s. So, you know, it's really hard to say what would have happened, you know, but it's a great place. It's just a great place. People come, people are comfortable, people gather there, people eat there, and anytime we eat, I mean, eating together is one of the most bonding things that humans do. So whether it's, you know, you just killed a mastodon and let's all get together and eat this mastodon. You know, you have, you know, five guys killing the mastodon and then 40 people enjoying the meal together. I mean, it's a civilization building things. You know, first dates, you know, what do you do for a first date? You get a cup of coffee or, you know, you go out for lunch. You know, what's the best time when families are together is when they get together and they share Thanksgiving meal. I mean, they're eating together. That's what bonds us to human to human. The eating is a huge piece of that glue. And we eat with people all the time, and we bond with people. And people bond with their friends and their family through that which we have provided to them. So it's a really, I mean, if you think about it, you know, mystically, it's just a tremendous way to put human to human. It's probably above owning a small little cheese store, but that's what I believe. So,
and you're eating together in terms of the samples, or?
Yeah, in terms of the samples, or you know, listening to what you're feeding, or you know, we're part of your meal. From the time when we're part of the procurement process. And if you think about, you know, the person going to the supermarket, they got that cart, and they're going just as fast as they can to get out of here. I want to go shopping, and I want to get this done. Oh, I got to go to the grocery store tonight. Why shouldn't the procurement of your food be enjoyable? I mean, why hate going to buy your food? You're poisoning it from the very beginning. Versus if you come into my store, you're going to have a great time getting your food. You're like, this was fun. So your food starts that much better. Or it starts without the negatives. You know, so a negative of a non of a negative is a positive, I'm pretty sure. I'm not a mathematician, but I think that's the way it works. So you're putting more value, more enjoyment, and then you prepare it. You enjoy preparing a meal, and then you serve it, and then you consume it. You know, it's all positive. And so the supermarket mentality drives me nuts, because you're putting in a negative where there shouldn't be one. Another example of avoiding a negative, there's a phrase that drives me nuts. And that's if I say, thank you. People reply, no problem. What do you mean, no problem? Why would you put the essence or the possibility of a problem into a thank you? The response is not no problem. The response is you're welcome, or my pleasure, or of course. Problem? Why problem? How did that phrase ever get to be? That is absurd. That kind of, so you don't need to put in negatives in your life. There's enough of them out there that happen to us anyway. Let's rejoice in the pleasures that we have. Anyway, I'm just a stupid marching, you know, I'm just a humble little cheese shop. I don't know. I can't talk about how Americans disvalue their food supply, and I'm not going there.
Oh, why not?
I think it's a really
good subject. Yeah. That's the next step in the conversation, really, isn't it? You mentioned grocery stores. Instead,
it's just so much bigger than me. I can't solve it. I can't fix it. I can provide a haven for people that care, and I can provide an example for my employees so that they do not say no problem. I guarantee they don't say that. Now it's life is great. Life is truly great. We're here for a short time. Make everything as pleasurable and as enjoyable and as fun and as exciting as you can possibly make it. Why not?
As you have strived to for all of this protection and perfection in your retail business, what's been going on up and down the street? How has Concord changed in these 10 years that you've been here? And the rest of the town, the rest of your street, the other businesses?
Well, Concord has, it hasn't changed all that much in the 10 years. We've lost a couple of stores. It's sad to see Anderson Photo going, but people don't have pictures developed anymore. It's all digital. We lost the harness shop, but you know, people don't need to replace their suitcases all that often, or their, you know, the long-lived hard goods that, you know, you buy a briefcase, what, three times in our lives do we buy a new briefcase? And there's some nice, you know, I think there's probably more clothing, women's accessories type businesses than there was 10 years ago. But we still have, you know, the bookstore, which is a fantastic independent bookstore. We still have Vanderhoof's. We have the toy shop. We have, you know, lots of other things besides, you know, frou-frou stuff that is not around. So it hasn't changed a whole lot. I think it's a great, it's a viable community. business community. I know I'd never own another store if I couldn't walk to the hardware store. I'd never own a business if I couldn't walk to the... I mean, I've literally carried a sink to the hardware store and said, Scotty, how do I fix this? And he gets the parts and shows me how to do it. It's a great town. It's a great community. We all support each other. I know most of the merchants in town. I don't think I know all of them. I don't know all the owners, but I probably know the assistant managers or the managers.
Are you active in the chamber? Is there an active chamber?
There's a very active chamber, yeah. There's a great chamber of commerce that does a great sidewalk sale or summer sizzling sale where we close off the street and we have music and entertainment on the outside. And they do that in July, and then they organize the Christmas walk where all the stores are open until 8 o'clock on a Thursday night, early December shopping night, and the Christmas lighting, the tree lighting ceremony. And yeah, the chambers, as well as monthly networking opportunities at different places throughout town. They do a lot of good stuff. And then they just put together a flyer for all the events that are going on in Concord in the month of December. And I was thinking it'd be, you know, a couple of pages. It was 4 pages. I had to go to another page. There's so much going on in town, which I didn't even realize. But to see it all in one place, it's nice because, you know, somebody comes in from, you know, Wellesley, West Chelmsford, Westford, you know, the outlying towns. There's, wow, there's something to do in Concord, and they come to town. And that supports all of us.
Well, this is incredible. I love hearing stories of passion. Even I didn't know anybody could be so passionate about cheese. Because I'm not even allowed to eat it. But I love it, but I'm not allowed to eat it.
Something else will kill you first. Have a piece of cheese. It's great.
Find all of this passion. It just tickles me to death. I'm very, very happy to have had this opportunity. But what else should I have asked you? Because even the retail business is beyond my comprehension, largely. What else might we have asked you that we didn't? I don't want you to feel like anything's been left out here.
You know, I can talk for days. I mean, on a multitude of subjects. I mean, I can just prattle on endlessly about lots of different things.
Okay, here's a question for you.
Yeah.
What's your favorite cheese?
Well, that depends on the situation. Mm. And secondly, it's sort of like asking who's my favorite child. Now, fortunately, I got it right the first time, so we only have one. But is your question then, is it my desert island cheese? I have a long life, and I can only bring one cheese with me. Is it my Last Supper cheese? They finally caught up with me, and I'm getting the chair in the morning. Is it the best cheese in the house right now? Is it the cheese that I bring home the most? You know, I mean, those are 4 really different cheeses. So, you know, it's a complicated question because it's like, well, how do I feel and what am I going to be doing? It's not just because I'm not the same emotional. I'm not in the same emotional state every day, and so my food is not going to be able to satisfy me in one single emotional state. I mean. I want it all. I mean, that's why, I mean, I'll be on the, tomorrow, I'll be on the counter all day, and I'll probably taste 25, 30 different cheeses. I won't eat them. You know, I won't eat a lot of them, but I'll have a little taste, and I'll just get that flavor in my mouth, and I'll breathe in and taste it and have all that great flavor and be like, oh, it's so good. And I'll want another bite, but I'll just have the little taste. Just like after lunch. You know, I just want a little something. I just want a little sweet thing. A little piece of chocolate. That's all. I just need a little tiny piece of chocolate the size of a quarter. That's all I want. Because I'll enjoy that little piece of chocolate. Because I'll pay attention to it. I mean, people don't pay attention to their food. People scarf their food without tasting it. How can you do that? You're robbing yourself of this incredible pleasure of flavor and smells and aromas. If you don't taste it, you're just stuffing the gullet. You got to eat. But if you pay attention to your food and you eat good food and you pay attention to it, you will get so much pleasure, and pleasure that costs you nothing at all, nothing. It costs you no more time, right? It costs you no more money because you're just eating it. All it does is bring you pleasure for zero. Now, where else is that legal? Right? I mean, and all it is is take a mindset. It's simply a mind shift to pay attention to what you're putting into your body. Which shouldn't you be doing anyway? Shouldn't you want to know what's going into your body? This is the only one we have, as far as we know, right? Shouldn't you pay attention to that? And why not? If you're going to pay attention to it, it's going to bring you pleasure, and it's not going to do at zero cost. It's like the only thing that's really free. It's the pleasure. The price is included, but you're not taking it. If you're not paying attention to it. Wow. How crazy is that?
But it's not free to buy a 20-something dollar pound piece of cheese.
No, but to eat that piece of cheese, to pay attention to how it tastes, is free. I'm just talking about the pay attention piece.
It could be
a hot dog with French's yellow mustard. That's fine. All I want you to do is enjoy and pay attention to the flavor of that Fenway Frank with French's yellow mustard on it, which is great. I mean,
people just
scarf it. They have no idea what their food tastes like. How nuts!
But it would be interesting. I mean, that's fabulous. But just to hear you talk a little bit about working in with, is it fair to call it a high-end shop that's going to attract people who are willing to spend more, considerably more than you're spending in the supermarket for a block of cheese? I mean, a certain clientele, and it's high-end, great stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah, it is. And it's more expensive than, my cheddar is going to be more expensive than the least expensive cheddar you're going to find in the supermarket. But it's going to taste a lot better, too. And it's going to bring you more satisfaction per ounce, I would bet. And you know that, if you get a piece of brie, you buy a piece of brie from me, it's going to be... It's going to be the correct maturity. It's not going to be overripe. It's not going to be underripe. It's going to be the way you want. And if that one's too mature for you, then I've got a slightly younger one, a slightly milder one. And you can fine-tune what you're looking for versus going into a supermarket where you're not interacting with anybody. You're just like, okay, there's a bunch of cheese in front of me. What do I want? And you're making that decision all on your own versus coming to my store. You have to speak to somebody. You have to interact with another human being. Here's another really interesting phenomenon that I've noticed. Over here at TD Bank, they have a parking lot that's behind the building. The ATM is in the front of the building. Okay? People park in the back, walk up the stairs, walk through the lobby, past the tellers, out to the ATM machine, get their money, walk back out through the lobby, go back into their cars. Now, for me, I'm a people guy. Why would I interact with a machine when I have a perfectly good teller that is perfectly capable of giving me whatever money I want out of my account? I mean, ATMs weren't around until the early 80s, right? Before that, you had to go to a teller. You had to talk to somebody. Now we're eliminating by choice. We've been so conditioned. Now we eliminate the desire to want to go talk to somebody to get our money out of the bank. I mean, some banks charge you money to see a teller. Oh, I'd go berserk. I don't want to talk to a machine. I want to talk to a human being. I want to say, hi, good morning, how you doing today? What's going on? How'd your son do last Sundays at the soccer game? You know, I mean, we're people. We're a community. We're civilization. Don't we want to be together? And I think that comes a lot from the fact that, you know, because I'm in the food business, and as I started out quite a while ago, that, you know, eating together is, you know, the glue, I think, of what keeps us, brings us together as a civilization and as a culture. But I'm a little biased, obviously. But it's amazing to me how many people, because I'll be talking to the tellers, and I'll see people come in. I'm like, what are they doing? Oh, they're using the ATM. I said, why don't they come to you? Oh, people do that all the time. It's more common that people will walk through, use the ATM, than use the teller. And it's, you know, I'm certainly in the minority. I'm a freak of humanity, I guess, and I want to talk to people instead of interact with the machine.
Do you do other things to encourage community, whether it's at a family table or other human-to-human interactions beyond the store? It's just so compelling the way you talk about it.
No. I encourage people and I try to set an example, but I'm not going to proselytize.
How do you set an example?
Just by going to the teller and talking to the waitresses and getting to know people's names and what they like, what they do, what their wives' names, their husbands' names, and what their dogs' names are, and be able to speak as in an intimate, close way, the way you treat your friends. I mean, you know your best friend's husband's name and wife's name and probably their kids and how old they are. And everybody, why shouldn't we treat everybody like that? Why do we not care? I mean, how many bosses, you know, will say like, hey, man, how was your weekend? Oh, good, good, good. It's like, that boss doesn't care about you. The boss that says, how'd Sally do on the play on Friday? That's the boss that cares about you, right? That's your friend. That's somebody you have a relationship with. Whether it's your boss or your friend or the mailman or the bank teller. We're all people.
Or the cheese man.
Or the cheese man. Yeah. I mean, we've had customers probably 8 to 10 in the last 6 years that either wrote, called, or came in to tell us about a family tragedy, whether they lost their husband, their wife, their son died. They came in to tell us because we are like their family. I mean, we have relationships with these people. And they love us the way, and we're part of their world. You know, the concentric circles that go around us. You know, we're in a couple of degrees for them. And we're just clerks. You know, we're just store clerks. But they know we care.
How do you teach that to an employee?
You can't teach it. You can't teach it. You model it. Because you can't put your fingers on it. But there becomes a sense of culture in the store, and that's the great and the horrible thing about developing a culture. You know, I want a culture of caring. Well, you know, how do you do? You can't do caring. But once that's set, culture sort of becomes self-sustaining and self-nurturing. So, you know, once you get a few people, then everybody, that becomes the norm instead of, you know, and people want to conform to the norm. as humans do. So that becomes the way everybody acts and behaves, because that's how everybody acts and behaves. Therefore, I am everybody, and therefore I will act and behave that way. Does that make sense?
Yes, spreads like a cheese culture.
You know, really. It's, yeah, it's...
like a living culture takes over and dominates.
Exactly. So that's kind of... But I don't think you can teach it. I don't think you can even verbalize it. I mean, when they see... I don't know.
I think you have verbalized.
I'm not smart enough to figure that out. I just do what I can. And, you know, it seems to be working, I guess. I mean, I'm happy, so, you know, and my employees, I'm happy, and my employees stay around.
What more could
you do? You know, I guess we're good.
Well, thank you very much for coming in today.
My pleasure.
This has been wonderful.
What a great, spirited interview.